This is the Kinky Cast. This is an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 15 of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. In today's episode, we have Janet Hardy, founder of Greenery Press. Here's our hosts, Woody and the Beast.
Thanks, Max. And here we go for a really good show on the Kinky Cast today. Sitting across the table from me, as usual, is the Beast. How are you, sir?
I'm good, Woody. I'm good. And you're right. We do have a great show for the listeners today. We have the wonderful Janet Hardy with us, who is the founder of Greenery Press. So I'm going to let you take it away, Woody.
Janet W. Hardy is the author or co-author of 11 groundbreaking books about relationships and sexuality, including The Ethical Slut and Girl Fag, A Life Told Through Sex and Musicals. She has traveled the world as a speaker and teacher on topics ranging from ethical multi-partner relationships to erotic spanking and beyond. Janet serves as editorial director for Greenery Press, the firm she founded in 1992, as well as Down There Press. She also runs The Active Voice, which offers editorial, event, and promotional counseling. Janet, so good to have you on the phone today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
We are fantastic. We're looking forward to the nice warm weather that we're having out here. And you're in the Pacific Northwest. Is it wet up there this time of the year?
It shouldn't be, but right now it is. Yeah, usually we're starting to get into some nice warm spring weather by now, but we've had rain and hail this week, so... It's Oregon. What can you do?
Well, you know, you can enjoy the lifestyle. It's a great lifestyle up there.
It is. It is. And I wouldn't want to be anyplace else, but about now I'm ready for some sunshine.
I hear that. Winter. Well, we just got ours and we're real happy about it.
Amen.
You are the founder of Greenery Press. Where did that come from? How did you come about finding that?
The name goes back actually to my previous lifetime, during which I was a vanilla heterosexual wife and mom, believe it or not. And... during therapy, in that lifetime, I was doing a lot of drawing, art therapy, and I came to use the color green as kind of a color that meant serenity and warmth and happiness for me. And so I started calling myself Lady Green when I came into the scene, and Greenery Press just moved from there. And there are still some of my books out under the Lady Green pen name that I was using way back in the beginning.
Yes, I have a copy of The Complete Spanker here in front of me. What do we call these? Self-help books?
Yeah, or, I don't know, educational books,
educational.
How-to books, I guess.
How-tos. How-tos. Yeah. That's a good word for it.
Certainly, Greenery Press has been the mainstay for the kinky lifestyle. You probably have more books than anyone else out there by some really great authors.
Thank you. At the time that it all started, I was partnered with Jay Wiseman, as you might know. And he had written SM 101, but was dragging his feet a little bit about bringing it out. And I was working as an advertising copywriter. And I got fired from my advertising job. Basically, they made up a reason, but the real reason was that they were listening in on my phone calls and didn't want perverts like me working there.
Goodness.
And so we had to sort of find a way to make some money really quickly. So he self-published SM 101. I self-published my book, The Sexually Dominant Woman, and it all started from there. And then I guess it was 1998, we merged the two companies, and I incorporated. In 2010, I sold the company to our distributor, SCB Distributors, but I'm still on board as editorial director for it and for Down There Press, which used to be the house publishing company at Good Vibrations, which is also owned by our distributor. So I'm still, you know, turning words into books, but I'm not the one handling the money anymore, which is really great because I kind of suck at the money part. So we have somebody else that does that now, and I love it to death.
Turning words into books. Nowadays, turning paper into text on portable readers and that is a big thing right now. How many of your books have made it across to electronic form?
Nearly all. There's one or two where we're having trouble finding the source files, and it's just such a hassle to pay for the scan that we haven't quite gotten to it. But I would say 90% of our titles are available as ebooks now.
Who are those distributed through?
SCB Distributors in Gardena, California, but they distribute to all the major trade and adult wholesalers. So you can find our books most anywhere.
Like Amazon or?
Oh, Amazon, I think Kobo, Barnes & Noble. You know, if you're looking for ebooks, any of those ought to be carrying our ebooks. And pretty much anybody ought to have our paper books. And if they don't have them, they can order them because they're available through all the major wholesalers.
Paper? What is paper?
That's a stack here on the desk.
Oh, that. I have gotten, I am leading a paper-free lifestyle now.
Of when I moved up here to Oregon.
Oh, yes. Well, my kinky library has gone back quite a number of decades, and I value these. Every time I have to purge to downsize, these are the ones that are guarded jealously.
Yeah. Good to know. Someone is keeping the library.
Speaking from the publisher side, can you talk a little bit about some of the authors that you have in the titles?
Oh, well, absolutely. Let's see. Our top-selling author still and always is Jay. His book, SM101, 20 years old, and it's still our top seller. Not only Greenery's top seller, but I think it's the top seller for our whole distributor. It is
the reference manual for S&M.
It is. It absolutely is still the go-to book after all these years. He did a remarkable job. And his other books sell very well as well. After Jay, we have Mistress Lorelei, who did the Mistress Manual, and her book still sells astonishingly well also.
Is Lorelei still in the community and active?
I'm not sure how often she gets out to parties and things, but she maintains a blog, and she definitely still considers herself part of the scene. You know, you get to a certain point in your life when the parties don't seem like quite as much fun as they used to.
I fully understand that.
Uh-huh.
So some of your other authors?
Well, Dossie and I think, are the next on the list in terms of top-selling. Our books are still doing very well. We've done 5 together and a couple of second editions of a couple of them.
The Ethical Slut is a reference manual for me also.
Yeah, The Ethical Slut outsells all of Dossie's and my other books put together. It's no longer published by Greenery Press, though. We sold it to 10 Speed, but then 10 Speed was bought by Random House, so it's now being published by Random House, which is great. We just get nice checks in the mail twice a year.
Oh, that's so nice. Yeah.
It's a way that you can just do the work once and go on getting money for a long time.
It's a great way to have it, you know? I like that.
Yep, it is. It doesn't always work that well, but in this case, we had no idea when we wrote The Ethical Slut that it was going to be the phenomenon that it's turned out to be, but we're so thrilled. And there's an audiobook now of The Ethical Slut, and so that's doing quite well as well.
What else do you have there?
Oh, Midori. Midori's book, when we first published it, I wasn't sure that it would have legs, that it would continue to sell year after year. I thought it might be just something that sold brilliantly for a couple of years, and then the people who wanted it would have it. But no, it's gone on selling and selling.
Yeah, there's two of them sitting on my library shelf, and I don't know why I have two of them. It's a beautiful book.
Thank you. I worked my ass off on that book. So those are really the top sellers, but there are others, you know, Deborah Addington's Hand in the Bush, Hardy Haberman's Family Jewels, my own The Complete Spanker. We call those the ones that have the white covers and the striped spines. We call those our white papers. They're single topic books, and they sell quite well also. And then we have our little toy bag guides, the little 4x6. I call them a workshop in a book because they're supposed to be about the amount of information you would get if you went to a 3-hour workshop on whatever the topic is.
And I will say those were a marvelous idea when I saw them the first time a couple of years ago. Those were just fantastic information, quick, concise, and a handy go-to reference for whenever you need to reference something and freshen
up. That
was
the idea. Yeah, we have a brand new one out. I think it's just back from the printer last week on Chastity Play by Mistress Simone out of Chicago. And I think that's going to be very popular because there's a lot of interest in the whole chastity lifestyle.
Our whole lifestyle is expanding at a phenomenal rate in the last decade. It's just taken off in the last couple of years, even more so. I'm just kind of dismayed sometimes at the unwillingness many of our people have to actually pick up a book and read.
A friend of mine was a submissive woman, and she used to run personal ads. And one of her standard questions when people responded to the ads was, what books have you read? We asked, you know, well, what answer do you want to hear? And she said, any answer except there are books.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that one is delete. Delete. Next, please.
Yeah, these days there's no excuse for not knowing about the information that's out there.
You mentioned Hardy Haberman's book, Family Jewels. And so that's dealing with the gay male Leatherman side of the...
Not specifically. It's for anybody who wants to do cock and ball torture. And Lord knows I've done my share of it, and I'm not a gay man, much as I might like to be. I'm not. So, no, it's Hardy is well known in the gay leather scene, but the book is for anybody who likes to do evil things to cocks and balls.
Or have evil things done to their cock and balls.
Or have evil things done to their cocks and balls. Absolutely so.
And that's definitely something many people overlook is, as bottom, you need to be as well trained as your top partners are in order to make
Absolutely.
Those informed decisions that are required for safe, sane, consensual play.
That was actually how the whole Dossie and Janet partnership got started. Was I had taught a workshop, I forget where now, and someone had asked what I thought was a remarkable question, which was, okay, well, you and Jay and John Warren and a bunch of people have written good books about how to top. When is somebody going to write a good book about how to be a bottom? Which, you know, just knocked my socks off. It was such a good question. And so when I got to know Dossie, she was such an obvious candidate that I asked her to write the book. And she said, okay, but I can't write a book by myself. You'll have to do it with me. And that was how that whole partnership got started, was on the bottoming book, because we thought it was so important that bottoms inform themselves and teach themselves how to be good bottoms.
We say that all the time.
Communication and education, two big words.
I think we talk a lot too much in the scene about technique and a lot too little about how the energy moves. Technique, really, truly, 99% of what we do in kink you could learn in a weekend. A few knots, some basic safety information, some basic anatomy. There's not a lot to it. It's not rocket science. And you can spend the rest of your life learning how to make it wonderful.
Throw in a dash of common sense there, which I find is a little short sometimes.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure common sense is teachable, actually. I think the sad part is it doesn't get Darwin awarded, because the person who doesn't have the common sense is not necessarily the person who gets hurt.
Let's shift gears and switch over to the author side of your life. You had mentioned working with Dossie on The Ethical Slut and the bottoming book and those sorts of things. I also noticed that you have a partnership with Dr. Charles Mosier on Sex Disasters.
Yep, we did Sex Disasters together, which was the most fun I've ever had working on a book. We just had a blast working on that book together. We really enjoy each other's company and each other's sense of humor, and I think that comes through pretty strongly in the text, because we just had a riot.
It's interesting, in the title it says, Sex Disasters, then in smaller print, and How to Survive Them.
Yep.
I've heard Dr. Charles speak at his presentations about this and telling the war stories of the emergency room and what have you. Do you have any stories from the book that you want to share?
We actually asked around to get people, you know, to tell us some of the sex disasters that they had encountered. And one person, you know, there's an item in the book about my cat ate a used condom. People react to that by going, no, that never happened. But yeah, that's an actual thing that happened to somebody. We had to go find a kink-positive vet who could explain to us how to deal with it when your cat swallows a used condom. Apparently, cats are a little prone to swallow things that look like snakes. And a used condom is able to look like a snake.
As they say, this too will pass, I suppose.
That was the main answer. As long as, basically, it's the same as a person who swallows a condom, which happens too. As long as they're not choking on it, it's not likely to be a problem. The very first one in the book is, I can't get the cock ring off. That has happened to people we know. We also included things that Charles is, of course, a doctor, and I'm a fairly well-educated sexual being. And there's a lot of stuff we think is commonplace, but as we move around the world, we find a lot of people don't know. And so we call them extremely complicated instructions for simple stuff. Things like, what is women's underwear all about? Why does it have all those strange names? What do all the strange names mean? How do you buy underwear for your lady if you don't know the sizes, et cetera, et cetera? So there's a whole section on that. There's a whole section on how to clean your sex toys. There's what does a man need to know about menstruation? Most men are just mystified and horrified by menstruation. So we have a whole...
We need to know everything about it. It's our partners. We need to know everything about it.
Well, it didn't seem right to us that people should be as horror-struck by something that half the human race spends, you know, a quarter of their life doing. So we felt that it was important to write about it. There's a whole section about how to shave your genitals.
As a member of the male of the species here, we go through the first formative years of our life being told that we're not allowed to know anything about the opposite sex.
Yeah.
And then as soon as you start mixing it up, then it's like, ooh, keep that away from me. And so we're trying to figure out how to be more in tune with our partner of the opposite sex or same sex or whatever the situation is. But we don't have the training. We don't have the background.
Yeah.
And so these books become the mixing point that allows us to go, oh, really? That seems so simple, but oh, yeah, I guess it is.
Yeah. It's one of many reasons that our authors tend to skew strongly female at Greenery. I've found that the books by women tend to sell better unless we're selling into the gay male community. And I also think it's tremendously important for women to talk about sex out where people can see, instead of having it be these ladies' room conversations as they've been for most of history. Getting the word out is hugely important. I think now it's getting to the point where it's almost tipped the other way and there needs to be more conversation by men out in the world. I'm very fond of the Good Men Project website. It's a terrific website. I met the editor at a conference we were both attending last month and we just talked and talked and talked. We had so much to talk about. It's basically a website about how to be male without being a dick. And it curates a lot of good information from other websites and runs a lot of original articles as well. Highly, highly recommended. I think there's a lot of conversation to be had about what ethical and authentic maleness is going to look like in the 21st century.
It is going through a shift again. And, you know, we went through the shift with the metrosexuals a few years back,
yeah.
And now it's evolved again.
Well, I think one of the huge differences I'm seeing is around parenting. I'm seeing the younger generations of men putting a great deal more time and effort into being dads than was true in my generation. And I think it's wonderful. I couldn't be happier.
And that role modeling for our up-and-coming children should prove most interesting in another 15, 20 years when they're becoming parents.
Oh, I so hope you're right. When I look at people of my generation, men of my generation especially, they tend to be really wounded around their fathers, around not having had good contact with their fathers. And I don't see any way that a man can be authentically a man when he hasn't had good fathering. So I'm hoping that the next generation will be better, happier, easier, less stressed about what it means to be male. So you talk about sex, and here I am wandering off into gender stuff, but I think it's important.
The gender stuff is really important, and we had some really good opportunities on the coasts, both the New York side and the West Coast. There is a lot of resources and people giving seminars on these sorts of things that we're talking about. But when you get into the middle part of the country, and we've said this a number of times on the show, and especially when the religious right is running things, it takes away a lot of the information from the people. And so we're trying to stir it up a little bit and get people to listen to the masters that have created a lot of this lifestyle. And that's one reason why you're on the phone today, because we do consider you one of the masters of bringing this information to the masses.
Oh, thank you. I think so, too. And it's good to be asked. And I think we've got a ways to go, particularly when we're playing with intentional disruptions in egalitarian power. It behooves us to be very careful with our ethics and very careful with recognizing the difference between perpetuating a system that we don't agree with versus undermining it from within.
And that might be an excellent chance to segue into What prompted The Ethical Slut? Nearly 20 years ago when you wrote the book.
I can tell you exactly what precipitated The Ethical Slut.
Please.
We had been asked to do an SM talk, it would be a BDSM talk, at a Mensa gathering in Sylmar, I think it was, in California. And so we went and did our little SM talk, you know, basic SM. And Dossie and I tend to teach from our own examples a lot. We tend to talk a lot about our scenes we've done with other people and with each other. But that night there was a hot tub gathering, and I ran into a friend of mine outside the tubs, and she said, "You should have heard the conversation in my hot tub." I said, "Oh, what was the conversation in your hot tub?" And she said, "The conversation in my hot tub was, did you hear about that S&M talk they did this afternoon? There were these two women doing it, and they were talking about stuff they had done together, and one of their boyfriends was right in the room." So we were just stunned by the, you know, we had thought we were going to do this outrageous SM talk, and none of that registered at all. What registered is the fact that we were Bali. That was what was outrageous. And so that was when we knew we had to write this book. And, of course, Dossie, as a therapist, works with many poly couples and groupings. I've just learned it from the inside. I'm not any kind of a healthcare professional. But between us, we had a lot of theories and a lot of stories. And so we did the first edition in 1997. And then we did another one, I believe it was in 2009, because we'd learned a lot more in the intervening years. So the new edition has a lot of new information in it, exercises and things. I think it's probably outsold. Certainly it's outsold all of the rest of our books put together and quite a few of Greenery's.
It was definitely a pioneering book in the poly lifestyle and in people owning their sexuality and owning their behaviors.
It was funny, while we were working on it, we were calling it The Ethical Slut as kind of a joke between us, with the understanding that once we got it finished, we'd have to think of a real title that we could put on the cover. And then we finished it, and we could not think of anything else to call it. And we told people about it, and they said, no, you have to call it that. We were scared to death to call it that.
And was there any marketing problems in the early days?
Not really. It surprised everybody. It was back before the web was really a big part of marketing. Had it not been, we might have had some trouble with censorship of the title. But I never put a dime into advertising that book. Its success was entirely word of mouth.
And you followed up that with a book called, along with Dossie, Radical Ecstasy.
Actually, there was one book in between we did, When Someone You Love Is Kinky, in between, which is a book for the friends, family, spouses, etc. of kinky people to help them understand their kinky love.
We're doing a show called Coming Out very shortly, which is coming out in all forms, including to your family. And I think we're going to take some reference from that.
Definitely a book you should be aware of then. But no, then we did Radical Ecstasy, which was, it's a book about the sort of spiritual, I don't like the word spiritual much, but it seems to be what it's called, but the transcendent aspects of the altered states of consciousness, perhaps, that one encounters doing SM, which, you know, that's a big part of both Dossie's and my kink practice and has been for years, and we wanted there to be a way to talk about that. I've talked to any number of people who have had a transcendent experience, a metaphysical experience, perhaps during their SM, and not understood what it was and been frightened by it. And I don't like to hear about things like that, because it's wonderful if you know what's happening.
And that's the problem. If you don't read a book like this, you don't know what to expect, and you go off over the cliff, and some people say they think they're dying. That is all kinds of things. I've had submissives go into subspace and break down into this hysterical crying, and they don't know what it is. And, of course, it scares the hell out of the top because they're not sure where they're going. And so without a reference book, we are ill-prepared for this.
Yeah, what we're playing with, you know, it is consciously designed to get to really deep places. That's why we do it. But sometimes it goes deeper than we thought it was going to. And without context, it could be really frightening.
And the journey back can be treacherous for some.
It can.
What other books have you personally put out? You mentioned The Lady Green.
Let's see. I'm working on number 12 right now.
Number 12. And any previews on number 12?
Number 12 is actually about my own journey, about the things we're talking about. It's about my path from entering into kink through becoming a kink educator and traveling around the world and all that, and then having an experience actually during a tantra class that was so dramatic and frightening and life-changing that it's the main reason that I no longer play. So that's that story. The book is called Impervious, and it is in process. And God only knows when I'm going to finish it, but I'm working on it. It's a difficult book to write, as you can understand. And my previous one to this was...
It sounds like you had a very life-changing experience.
If people are curious about it, I actually wrote an article about it that ran on SalonCom that they can read if they want. But if you search on Janet Hardy and Tantra, it should pop right up.
And the book before Impervious... Well, your book 11.
Book 11 is a book called Girl Fag, A Life Told in Sex and Musicals. And it's another memoir, but it's more about the aspects of my life that are gender-related and specifically about the fact that I've always fallen in love with and identified most strongly with gay men. They've been a huge part of my life, and I would be one if I could. And so it's that part of my story. It's a very different part of my story than the SM stuff that I'm working on now.
Shift gears a bit. What kind of evolution have you seen in our community? You've been in our community for over two decades now. Is that correct?
Yeah. I first started playing in the late 80s, and then I found the scene, the community, in 1990. Well, of course, the huge change, the sea change, came when the internet, when it became the main way we found each other. Up until we had such easy access through the internet, you had to really want to be part of this community, to go through the hoops that you had to get through to find it. You had to go scary places. You had to sort of leap with your eyes closed. It was very different. These days you can sit at a keyboard and go tappity-tap and find every resource you could ever possibly want that has to do with kink, but it was not like that. You know, I answered a personal ad in a newspaper, and the person in the personal ad had heard about something called the Society of Janus, and so we drove from Sacramento to San Francisco to go to an orientation, and, you know, there were all these things you had to do, all of which were frightening and dangerous, or felt dangerous at the time.
And we've seen this shift today that it's much easier access. Do you think this is a good move, or are we moving too fast today?
I would answer yes to that question. I think both. I think it is a good move in that a lot of people who would otherwise have been very isolated and very terrified don't have to be. The people that we all know are out there who have been alone with their fantasies for such a long time. You know, I was close to 30 by the time I figured out that I was not the only person in the world who got off to the idea of spanking. I had no way of knowing. These days it would be very hard not to know that. It's right out there in front of you. So that's the good part. The bad part is that they don't have any skin in the game. You know, they're not taking any risks to do this, and so they don't recognize how deep it can go, how important it is, how profound the differences it can make in your life. It can become sort of the flavor of the week and taken very casually. And so I don't like that as much.
Coming up through protocol and all that, I'm sure in the early days you
not a bit.
Not a bit, really.
Not a bit. I've never been a protocol doer and never will be. I don't like it. Not interested in it. Don't go there. I think it's really unfortunate that there's this belief that everybody who was around 20 years ago was into high protocol. I've always been an ecstatic sensation player with no interest in dominance and submission, no interest in protocol. And there's plenty of me. Not as many as there are of the other folks, but plenty of me.
Amen. I am there with you. One thing that I've noticed in this new expanding community is that there's less investment by the many of the people entering, and they mm-hmm. don't have the same investment to protect the community that we had 20 years ago when the communities were isolated and much more discreet.
Yeah.
As you said, the flavor of the week in many cases. We have more tourists, I think.
We do. And the part of it that I find least comfortable is many people whose values are otherwise very traditional, very conservative, who just do SM on the side. And, I don't care about their politics. That's not what I'm talking about here. In my mind, even the most extreme dom-sub relationship is based in profound equality. There has to be this belief going in that both people have the strength and the ability to get their needs met and to ask for what they want and to get what they want. And if you come into it with misogyny, with heterophobia, or homophobia, or heterophobia, actually, with any of these values that feel really wrong to me, I think what you get back from it can be really warped in a very damaging way. And I think because there's so little at risk to coming into the scene these days, we're seeing a lot more people who really haven't thought that sort of thing through, and I'm not comfortable about that at all.
I think along with that goes a feeling of self-worth.
Yes.
Sometimes you'll see a submissive come in, either male or female, who is feel they're not worthy or any of these things, and they become doormats and get run over by the community.
Yeah. If you're doing SM or DS or whatever it is you're doing, in order to fill up some lack in yourself, that's going to be a problem. That has to do not only with problems with self-worth that we see in submissives, but we also see problems of rigidity, problems of unwillingness to bend. That one of my aphorisms, in fact, my favorite Janet aphorism, is that everybody involved in a scene is in service to the scene. And you get dominants who are not willing to be in service to the scene because they are somehow above being in service. There's a problem. It's about ego. Rather than about creating something together with someone with whom you connect. And that's a problem.
It is. For years, I've said I'm a service top, and people misunderstand what that means.
We all are, darling. that's one of the great unspoken truths of kink. I'm actually doing a little telephone consulting with a novice top who he's bright enough to get that there's an internal contradiction in what he's reading, and he's trying to work it out by himself, and so he's paying me to help him work it out, because he's going, but if she wants to submit and I'm giving her what she wants, doesn't that make me kind of submitting to her? Well, yes, of course it does. Of course it does. And if it didn't, then we wouldn't be doing something consensual. We would be doing abuse. We're all in service to the same scene. We're just holding up our ends of the roles.
When the value gets that offset, that it is not a give and take, a power exchange, if you will, then that's where the whole scene goes bankrupt.
Yeah. The minute it starts to get driven by ego instead of by connection, that's when it comes apart. And, you know, I've been guilty of that myself, not ego in the dominant way, because that's not the way I play, but ego in the exhibitionistic way. That was something that was starting to turn sour in my kink life that I had to pull back from, was that I was more into the showing off of the scene than the connection of the scene. And it's particularly problematic, of course, for those of us who are teaching, because you do have to show off in order to teach, but it's really easy to get hooked on that.
And the audience also appears.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's great strokes. You know, if what you want is to feed your ego, this scene is a great place to do it. But you're going to screw yourself up, and you're going to screw your partners up.
Janet and Woody, please tell me that you're blowing all the fantasies that that many people have.
I'm so sorry. If you could see the big grin on my face, you would see exactly how sorry I am.
I can tell how sorry you are. Uh-huh.
So you two are saying that there's something deeper here if people want to reach for it in this lifestyle than just the surface that has caused its explosion in recent years. There's a much deeper possibilities here.
Absolutely. I come back and back and back to the metaphor of theater, partly because I'm a big theater whore, but partly because I think what we do is theater. And you've got to figure that for everything that's going on the stage during a theater production, there's a lot of people running around backstage, you know, messing with lights and props to make it happen. The surface is the surface, but there's a huge amount of work and entanglement and difficulty and problem solving going on behind it to make the surface look as smooth as it does. And, you know, that's what's going on in the scene. If I'm playing daddy, and, you know, I love to be daddy, but while I'm being daddy, I've also got to be the stage manager. I've also got to be the dialogue coach. I've got to, you know, all of this. And each of them has their own role to play. so that I can be a good daddy.
Truly the theatrics that you mentioned that goes on into doing a good scene. It starts days before when you start to do the mind fuck. And you get everything worked up, and then you have to do all the
Only in them, in you too.
Oh, exactly. You've got to get the headspace right.
You're prepping your own mind.
Yeah. And so then you go into the choreography of getting all the gear set up and everything right, and the lights set and the music just right. And then once the scene starts, you're still having a part of your brain that's off in the corner going, okay, now I have to have this ready. This has to happen next.
Yeah.
We've talked to a psychologist about what goes into a scene. He says that the bottom gets more out of the scene than the top. Well, yeah, I could see that.
It's certainly different. Although I found in my years in the scene that the more I topped, the more it didn't matter to me whether I was bottoming or topping. I would come out of the scene, except for whatever marks were on my hide. It didn't feel that much different to me. It took me a long time and a lot of practice to get there. It's a little bit like driving a car, that when you're first learning to drive a car, you know, your attention is 82 places at once. You've got to be checking the mirror. Your foot's got to be doing this. Your hand's got to be doing this. And then after you've been driving a car for a decade, you don't even notice these things anymore. They're all just happening back in your hindbrain. And, you know, you're listening to the radio and eating your burger or whatnot. And topping is a lot the same way. In the beginning, you're very consciously choosing which toy and checking the respiration and all that. And with practice and practice and practice, you get to where all of that is running in the background. And you can just come along for the ride and enjoy it in the same way your bottom does.
Checking respiration, you're such an overachiever. Vital signs?
Yeah,
come on.
Well, one does prefer them to be at least breathing. They don't have to be breathing right necessarily, but breathing is a good bottom line, I think. The ones that aren't breathing are no fun to hit.
No. When they stop squealing, it's no fun anymore.
Actually did that scene once. Did a scene with a friend. I had found that one of the scenes that always drove me to safe word was forced orgasm. I tend toward post-orgasmic migraines. You'll see in Sex Disasters, there's a section on post-orgasmic migraines. That's me. So my head would start to hurt, and I would safe word. But being me, I got curious to see what happened if we pushed past that. And so I just went into the scene and said, I want you to go on making me come, even if it seems like I can't do it anymore. We went back and forth about whether I would have a safe word, and she wasn't willing to do it without one, but I just decided that I would die before I safe worded, so that was that. And it turns out that when that scene ends is when I can't move anymore. The headache lasted 3 days, but I couldn't move anymore. I was so orgasmed out. It was, I think, the most intense scene I've ever done.
For many, it is about testing their personal boundaries in the flesh
and in the mind.
That's
a lot of what it was for me. Yeah, that was a lot of what my bottom space was about, was the ordeal.
Janet, your second book, The Complete Spanker, a book about spanking. I find that interesting.
I think that a lot of people think that hitting someone on the butt is simple. There's a level on which it is. It's actually one of my favorite classes to teach because you can cover the technique stuff pretty quickly. There's some basic stuff about anatomy and safety that you need to touch on and pacing and so on. But the rest of it is art. You know, the craft is easy. Hitting someone on the butt, what could be easier than that? But the art is how you orchestrate the sensations, how you read what's going on with them and decide to elevate or bring it back down. Some of the role things you can bring into it, whether it's a daddy-type spanking or a coach-type spanking or, you know, a headmaster-type spanking, yeah, they're all very different. In something as simple as spanking, you really have a microcosm of the whole art of kink, I think. And because it's my core kink, it's the one that I like to teach all this stuff in that context. It doesn't sell as well as some of the others because I think anybody with a hand thinks they know how to spank already. But it's really not that. There's so much more to know. I went into more information later. I did the Toy Bag Guide to Canes and Caning, specifically about canes, which are my favorite subset of spanking. Most of it's right there in The Complete Spanker.
Fantastic. Janet, this has been a real treat to go down the road for the last couple decades with you on these reference manuals for the BDSM scene that you have written or published. It's fantastic.
Thank you. And thank you for letting me wander off into some of the more abstruse stuff that I like talking about as well.
Oh, that's the fun part.
So, I think so, too. All right. Well, you guys have a great evening.
Thank you, Janet.
Jason here for National Coalition for Sexual Freedom. Do you own a professional business that everyone uses? Are you in the leather lifestyle? Or maybe you're kink aware? Do you want to offer your services to the leather community? Tap into the large growing list of professionals that are here to help those of us in the leather lifestyle. First, by understanding what it is that we do is often used against us by those who have no understanding of what we are all about. The National Coalition for Sexual Freedom's Kink Aware Professional List is where your business could be. Contact the National Coalition for Sexual Freedom today and ask about how to get your profession seen by those of us that are in the leather lifestyle who may need what it is that you do. Find us and more information about our Kink Aware Professional List at ncsfreedom.org. Helping is what we do and why NCSF is working for you.
Hey, Beast, I hear that sound again.
The mailbag's rattling and there's something alive in there.
It's starting to rip open.
Hi, I'm just calling to inquire. I'm new to this scene, and I just wanted to know if there's a limit to obsession or how much of your life you should devote to kinks. Anyway, I just started, and I feel like it's taking a lot out of my time and resources. So I just wanted to know what kind of advice you would have for people starting up with kink or getting into BDSM. All right, thank you so much.
Well, caller, that's a interesting situation you find yourself in, but not a unusual one at all. Like any new pursuit, hobby, lifestyle change, it at the beginning will seem to hit the consumer in your entire world. I might refer you to a couple of our previous podcasts on Subfrenzy and Subfrenzy Revisited for a bit of perspective on what your first few months or even first year or so might be like. Please check out those podcasts.
Episode 7 for the original opinion piece by Gabrielle, which dealt with Subfrenzy as a fairly new person in the scene. And then also episode 12 deals with somebody who's been in the scene for over 13 years. Those are Subfrenzy issues. Now, the caller didn't mention if he was a top or a bottom. We're assuming that there is the same amount of exuberance that is drawing him in, using up all his time, resources, and I guess budget buying things.
This will mellow with time for most people as you get your toy bag stocked and you see that the events are starting to be a bit repetitive for you, and you'll be seeking out more quality over quantity.
We wish you a lot of luck in your endeavor.
You have been listening to episode 15 of the Kinky Cast. Today we heard Janet Hardy, author and founder of Greenery Press. We want to hear from you with your comments or questions. So email us, questions@kinkycast.com, or call and leave a voicemail at 916-KINKY69. If you leave a contact number, we will try to reach you to join us on the show. Some listeners want to remain completely anonymous, so we have the Bashful tab on our webpage. Just type your message and hit send. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. On behalf of Woody, the Beast, and Cassie, I'm Max. See you next week when we hear from Master Jarome.